You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Hey, buddies, it is the Massive Report podcast. The Columbus Crew are the greatest team the world's ever seen. We all agree. We've been talking about it all year, and they showed it for probably the first time all year last weekend in Miami, just barely maybe, you know, holding on, giving us a glimmer of hope for the playoffs. And to dissect that glimmer, you've got myself, Bart Logan, with you. We've got Ori Benatar. We've got Alex Stanek. Fellows, we're a bit shorthanded, but we've at least got a banner win to talk about this week. And that's not even talking about the huge win for Team USA at our beloved lower.com field last Wednesday as well. But fellas, how are you doing? First of all, how are you feeling after that win Saturday?
I'm feeling okay. It would have been nice to have a statement win like this when we had more than a glimmer of hope for the playoffs. We need like 15 more of those, it feels like, to kind of get back into this thing. But, you know, it was a great performance from the team against an Inter team that, you know, to be fair, has struggled at times during the season. But a great win, kind of cool moments during the game with Pipa, which I thought was interesting. But overall, good team performance. You know, happy to get the win, certainly better than losing, which would have probably been the end of our season. So we live to fight another day, but a very, very good performance from the team.
And speaking of greatness, I did get a little bit ahead of ourselves, Ori, because we do have to talk about, you know, we talked about the greatest team and we'll be talking about the greatest team, but you need to tell us a little bit about the greatest place to be on earth.
I mean, while lower.com field is one of the greatest places to be on earth, the greatest place to be on earth is Saucy Brewworks, because it's the best bar in Columbus. It's the best place to be in the world, because at Saucy Brewworks, you go if your brew works, so you can be saucy with it. So go down to Saucy Brewworks, 443 West 3rd Avenue, get some food, get some drinks. Awesome stuff over there. You can watch a bunch of sports. They have trivia nights on weeknights. So go ahead, go to Saucy Brewworks. It's a lot of fun. And you maybe go watch a Crew game down there. If you can't make it to the LDC field, there's two more road games. Might be a good place to go watch some Crew on the road.
Absolutely. And we promise that we will be back there, back in person at some point here. But meantime, we do want to continue thanking and patronizing, encouraging everyone else to do so. Great brew, get saucy. Saucy Brewworks. So Ori, you had a chance to kind of follow this game, and I think, you know, this was a must-win game for Columbus.
You've
been saying that for the last month, because in fairness, every game has been, when you dig yourself in this sort of hole that this club has dug themselves into in defending their 2020 MLS Cup championship. But you need to beat teams, you know, like Miami that are around you, you know, in the standings, because it is very, very tight there. And that was, you know, a big game that could have been a really big swing. Three-point swing,
You
know, either way. And so that was a must win for Columbus, and they took care of business.
They did. And I would have to say it was the best performance of the season, just from minute one to minute 90. They never took their foot off the gas. I think it was really refreshing to see them go up 1-0 and then continue to sort of strive to score more goals. I think they sort of understood Miami's weaknesses, and the mentality was there. And that's the mentality that they need to bring for these last five games of the season. And that's something I asked Josh Williams about after the Philadelphia loss. While Josh was, you know, heated in that moment and, you know, very displeased with the way that things were going, I basically just asked him, is it a little bit encouraging that this team sort of bounces back after long rests with really good performances? That's something that I kind of mentioned a lot last season when we saw the season start and stop and restart again many times. And every time the Crew kind of took that big break, the first game back from that big break, they came out all guns blazing. And Josh kind of said, like, yeah, I kind of scoffed off the question. Understandably, he was not pleased with what happened in that Philadelphia game. But, you know, 13, 14 days after that, and the Crew come with their best performance of the season. That's exactly the way they needed to respond, set the tone for these last five games, and people are going to start thinking they still got a shot. It's a long shot, but it is still possible if they can perform like that for every game. And I personally thought, while Jossy Zardes was named MLS Player of the Week for his brace, he's been on fire recently for Columbus, I still think Pedro Santos was the best MLS Player of the Week. I thought he was the man of the match. A goal, two assists, kind of brings you back to those times when Pedro Santos gets hot in the fall. He did that last fall in 2020. And Caleb Porter told media this week about how he had a heart-to-heart with Pedro, kind of talking to him about what he wants to want him to do, be free-flowing, keep things simple. And he kept things simple on the wing. And when the wingers produce for this team, it just makes things better. You think of Santos, Etienne, Diaz, Matan, guys that have started on the wing this season. They haven't been producing a lot of goals or assists. You know, Diaz has one goal. Etienne doesn't have any. He hasn't scored since the MLS Cup final. Matan hasn't scored. And Pedro entering this game only had, I think, two goals, and one of them was a penalty. So really important that Pedro and the wingers contribute offensively to get this team back on track and really make games over by the time the first half ends. A shutout at lower.com field, 4-0 win, huge for the Columbus Crew.
Creating goals off of crosses, Alex, as we've been saying, this is the thing that you need to do every single time you have the ball on the wing. Just cross it in all season long. It's a winning strategy, winning formula. Jokes aside, it did, you know, lead to some goals this time around. I mean, a couple of absolutely gorgeous balls, and maybe it's, you know, more about who's, you know, on the providing end of those of that service, with Pedro Santos, you know, notably playing on the left wing, or right wing rather, you know, on the off wing. But I mean, serving balls in on his left and right foot. I mean, and those were absolute dimes on both of those Jossy goals.
Well, and not only that, I mean, the thing that you get with Pedro, and I remember when Pedro joined, a lot of people didn't like him. But what Pedro has done throughout his entire time with Columbus is just give 110%. And especially on that, I think it was the second assist that he had, where kind of just clipped it in there to Jossy, and Jossy right just dunked line, it, yeah. Right? And, you know, a player who doesn't give 110% doesn't even get to that ball. Like, I was just inbounds. But, you know, he just constantly hustling, really good service. I also think some of the difference this game versus other games is I thought Miami were pretty poor defensively throughout the game in a lot of ways. So, you know, how many of those turn out to be goals if, you know, a team is more on top of things. But great service from Pedro, kind of knew where Jossy would be. Jossy was in the right spot. And this is also one of the only times that we've seen like the team pretty much at full strength for a while. Mm-hmm. You know, we've had a lot of injury problems. Jossy's been in and out. A lot of players have kind of been in and out. And so, you know, maybe this team is starting to find their form, and maybe they can put together a run of games. Those away matches are the ones that kind of still concern me, because our away form and Caleb Porter's away form historically have not been the best. But definitely a good performance at LDC, and something the team can kind of look at and build upon in the coming weeks.
You know, Ori, obviously, you know, Miami set up with that, the five in the midfield, but Darlington Nagbe really commanded. And I think between, you know, this game and the game against Cruz Azul, a couple of Darlington Nagbe, and he's been healthy all season. Right. He's been maybe the one player who's kind of remained healthy, knock on wood, for Columbus. But it hasn't been until recent weeks that we've really seen him producing, being that engine. You know, he takes the ball away and helps facilitate. I think the first goal. And he was just absolutely dynamic in the midfield for the Crew. I mean, we talk about this just little glimmer of hope they have in the playoffs, but they need Darlington Nagbe to be that every single game from here on out if they want to have a shot.
Especially because of the fact also that throughout the entire season, MLS defenses have been zoned in on Lucas El Arayan, mm-hmm. in open play. And whenever he gets a touch, he tries to over dribble. I think in this game on Saturday against Miami, he kept things simpler, But even still, defenses are trying to zone in on Lucas, getting 2-3 guys around him as soon as he touches the ball. That's where Darlington Nagby comes in, especially in these games we've seen recently, like you mentioned, Bart, that he's being an engine. He's playing vertically, which I think is really important. Mm-hmm. Quick vertical passes, because when the Crew were in those losing streaks, the offense was moving slowly. Passes were horizontal. They were slower. There wasn't enough quick buildup. And to me, when you look at the way that they played against Miami, you want to see them play that way every single game if you're a Crew fan, just because they're doing different things to try and score other than just bombing it down to the wing and looking for these far crosses that are just going to no one or just going out of bounds. And Darlington Nagby certainly helps that when he's intercepting passes, when he's getting one-on-one with midfielders or defenders. He rarely ever loses possession. There was a period there where he was losing possession a little bit more than usual during that losing streak in the summer, but he's back to his top form. And Jossy Zardes is in his top form. If Pedro Santos can keep up his top form, then the Crew are in a really, really good position to give a competitive try to potentially sneak into that top seven. But they are not in the position where they fully control their own destiny. They can win out these last five games and get 15 points, but if teams above them do the same, or maybe drop one and win four or win five, depending on how many games they've played, then all that effort will be for naught. And then you'll look back on the season and think that 6-game losing streak in the summer pretty much is the reason that the Crew are not in the playoffs.
Well, and we'll break down all the scenarios, unlikely though they may be, for this team to make it into the playoffs. But want to zero in on a couple other performances that at least, and you know, full disclosure, I did not get to watch the entire game. I was in Chicago at a cousin's wedding. And wasn't going to be that guy watching the whole game on my cell phone. Did watch the extended replay later, though, and was following along. But at least one of the guys that stuck out to me was Vito Wormhoor, having one of his better performances for this team. You know, coming back from injury, obviously in there with Jonathan Mensah unavailable after traveling for the World Cup qualifiers. And Vito, I mean, this, I think, was one of the better performances, if not the best performance we've seen from him in a Columbus Crew uniform. I mean, few though they may have been. He played a couple great balls forward that we're just not used to seeing from him. And he and Josh Williams looked, you know, comfortable there paired together on that back line that got the first clean sheet that we've seen in quite some time.
Yeah, I thought he looked really good. You know, I'm curious to see if it's a Josh Williams thing, mm-hmm. Or if it's a Vito thing. If when you pair Vito with Mensah, if there's any sort of difference there. But no, he looked really, really good. You know, he's still coming off, and it feels like it was a long time ago, but he's still kind of in that recovery phase from that season-ending injury. And I think some players, when they come back from those really bad injuries, it changes the way that they play in kind of subtle ways psychologically. You know, maybe they're not going to go in as hard, or they're going to position themselves slightly differently, or they're going to kind of just handle that knee a little bit differently than they did in the past. So I wonder if some of this is him just kind of finding that confidence again to play his game. But he looked really good. His passing was solid. His positioning was solid. Again, you know, it's a Miami team that has struggled at times this season, but definitely something positive for Vito to hopefully take forward into future games. But curious to see how his chemistry is with other center backs on our roster, and if there's any difference there, because some of the games where he's been with Mensah, it's looked like a total circus. It's been really, really bad. They do not seem to be on the same page a lot of the time when they're playing. But the pairing with Williams looked really, really good this weekend. So hopefully that's something that they can build upon.
And then the other is, you know, the new addition, Steven Moreira, who, you know, we weren't sure if we were going to see much of him, if at all, this season. But at least it looks to me like he's, you know, carving out a niche for himself, may have displaced Harrison Offal. Obviously, King was subbed on later in the game. But, you know, that's when the game was well out of hand. And this is a must-win game if you're Caleb Porter. Again, they are all at this point. And for a guy who's, you know, new with the team, new into the country, you know, playing, I think is with his third at least person playing at right wing. He seemed to have some good chemistry with Pedro Santos on some overlapping runs on some good balls played into the box. And he seems, you know, Ori, Alex, to have kind of forced his way into this lineup again, maybe sooner than we thought, but I can't argue with the results right now.
Yeah, you can see that. I think Steven Moreira is potentially playing himself in to be the starting right back in 2022. And it'll be very interesting to see what lineups we see over the next four games, because you've got these next four games over a 2-week span. And what kind of teams we see for rotation might give us a clue as to what that 2022 starting lineup might look like for next season. So, for example, you've got Nashville on Wednesday for the Crew, then they host the New York Red Bulls. I would argue the New York Red Bulls game is far more important considering they are literally right next to each other in the table. It's a 6-pointer right towards the end of the season. It's at home. You can't lose any games at home. You can't drop points at home. You're a little bit more leeway to drop points on the road. So it'd be interesting to see from a right back standpoint, does Harrison Afful start against Nashville and does Moreira start against the Red Bulls or in the reverse? Similarly, the other position I'm looking at for the starting lineup is the left wing. Pedro Santos is going to be starting on the right wing, I think, and that is pretty much set in stone. And he can be interchanged between right and left, but who that second winger is, I think, is going to be interesting because Derek Etienne has kind of been the starter right now, but I don't think he's been performing throughout most of the season. He just hasn't really produced much from a goal scoring standpoint. He's got a couple of assists this year. So whether or not maybe we see Alex Matan start on the wing for one of these games will be very interesting to see. But in terms of the rest of the lineup, you know, Aloy Room is going to be the goalkeeper. The back line, it depends on injuries and whatnot, because Jonathan Mensah is still questionable for Wednesday against Nashville. So if he can't play, then it's probably going to be Vito and Josh again for Wednesday. If Luis Diaz gets healthy, where does he fit in for maybe the last three games of the season? I don't think he's going to play this week, being in health and safety. The midfield, if Artur is healthy and comes back, does he step in for Marlon Hairston? But the right back and the second winger, I think, are the positions that I would watch out for in the lineups. It'll give you a good clue for the future and a good clue who's performing in training, because Josh Williams and Caleb Porter and other guys have been saying, now that the team is healthier, guys need to earn their spots in training. The fact that Moreira is starting, I think that shows that he's been training well and he's earned his spot as a starting right back. Derek Etienne's training well. Maybe Matan not so much, because we're seeing Etienne start more. But I'm very curious to see what the lineups are going to look like. It'll give us a good clue as to if decision day means something for this team on November 7th against Chicago, what that final regular season starting lineup is going to be.
Now, one of the things that, you know, this has been a game kind of that we've been, as Crew fans, been waiting for a little bit, and not because of anyone on the home team, but rather for the return of Federico Higuain. I thought it was, you know, I'm not sure if he gets subbed on, if Miami isn't getting, you know, they're just trounced, but he did get some time on. Alex, if you were there, can tell us a little bit about, you know, what the reaction, what the reception is. You know, we've been to Crew games when legends have returned, notably Brian McBride, and the reception, and I would argue justifiably so, wasn't so warm. But from everything I saw, Pipa got the reception that he absolutely completely deserved.
Yeah, and I was actually not at the game this weekend, but I watched on television, and you could hear even through the TV broadcast the reception that he was getting. People did the Higuain chant as he was coming on, and it's totally deserved. You know, I think one thing, you know, and there have been comparisons to McBride. I think one thing that's a difference between Brian McBride and Federico Higuain is when McBride came back to Major League Soccer, he could have, in theory, come to the Columbus Crew, right? Mm-hmm. And he decided to go to Chicago Fire, and that's his hometown. You know, I don't hold it against him. I didn't hold it against him then. I actually thought the fans who were giving him stick for not coming to Columbus were being completely ridiculous. He's got kids. He's moving back from England to the United States. Of course, he wants to be with his family after having lived halfway around the world for a bunch of years. You know, totally understandable in my eyes. Pipa is not even that same situation. I mean, Pipa had the Crew extended a contract to him my guess is he would have accepted that contract and continued to play for Columbus. They did not extend a contract to him. He was a free agent. At that point, as far as I'm concerned, his responsibilities to the crew in terms of like not going to another team go out the window, right? You know, the idea that fans would expect a guy to retire and not keep getting a paycheck because he's let go from a team. I mean, I think that's crazy. You know, all of us know people professionally who have lost their jobs or something like that. And none of us would be like, oh, wow, you're not just going to like hang it up and never get another job. Like, no, of course you're going to go get another job. So total respect for people going to DC and then moving to Inter Miami to play with his brother. I think that's great for him. But, you know, he did some pre-match interviews and spoke very warmly about crew fans and about the city of Columbus. You know, he said that the love was mutual and things along those lines. He said the same thing post-match as well. Seemed very appreciative of the reception that he got. And, you know, he's a crew legend. I know, you know, when you think about what a legend is, at least in my eyes, it's a player that you talk about, say, 20 years from now, right? You know, players who you might mention to your kids someday. You know, Pipa's on a short list of maybe 5 or 6 crew players that I'm going to mention to my kids someday. He really defined an era for this team. And to see him come back and to see him still be beloved by the fans and it seems like by the ownership as well. Him and Dr. Pete were walking around on the pitch together after the game. You know, it's just great to see. So I hope that when he hangs up the boots with Miami, there will be an opportunity for him to be a brand ambassador or to be someone in our front office. I think he's got the right mentality in the bright soccer brain to really contribute to this club long-term. I think him and his family love this city at this point. I don't know for sure that he wants to stay in Columbus for the rest of his life, but I would at least extend that offer to him and keep him around if we can, because you know he's a legend. He's absolute legend, and it was good to see him back in Columbus, good to see him out on the pitch, and good that he didn't score against us because then people would have mixed feelings about it. But when you have a big lead, it makes it easier to cheer for the opposing player during the game, right? So.
No one from Miami was going to score in that game. Let's be realistic here.
It made it easy for fans. I mean, because then you don't have to think about it. You're not stressed about it. You know, at that point, the game's over, right? When Pipa comes on, the game was already over at that point. So people could just kind of sit back, give him his moment that he deserves, because he never really had a chance for a sign off, like a send off from crew fans. So this was his send off in a lot of ways, and it was a great moment.
I'm just, as far as I can tell, and Ori, I don't know if you were covering the game live, it doesn't sound like they played Don't Worry, Pipa is Happy in the stadium, which I do think they missed out on. Terrific song. Ori, any other, you know, thoughts from the return of Pipa or just... You know, other takeaways from, again, you know, a banner win for crew might be a little too late, but there's still plenty of scenarios where they can get in this playoffs.
I guess it was great to see people's reception. I thought it was awesome. You know, like Alex said, he really defined that generation of the late 2010s when the crew was consistently among the top teams in the East, making MLS Cup in 2015. And he is one of those crew players that you think about as sort of defining an era, similar to how you would maybe define Ohio State eras with particular players, you know, Archie Griffin or, you know, Eddie George, Ezekiel Elliott, something like that. Federico Higuain was the best crew player throughout most of the 2010s, and he fully deserved his reception. I thought it was great to see. And you can't blame the guy for wanting to go to Miami and play with his brother, you know, towards the twilight of his career. So... But it was a huge win for the crew. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to cover games in person because yay, COVID. But yeah, I've been covering from home and seeing how things have been going. And I got to tell you, I've watched every second of every crew game this year. And that for me was the best performance for the black and gold in 2021. If they can top that, I think it'd be difficult, but it is possible. The only thing that makes it tougher is that they don't know if they face a team worse in form than Miami, maybe Chicago. On decision day, I mean, I'm looking at Chicago's past results. They have won a game in the last 4 weeks. Miami can't say the same. I think Miami's lost six straight. So, but who knows when what Chicago will look like by the time they get to decision day. They've launched their new rebrand as well. So the new Chicago logo is out in the world, out in the open. But looking forward to see how these next two games are going to go. They are massive and historic too, if you think about it.
Oh, absolutely. And we'll jump in. You know, it doesn't – biggest test on the road for crew all season coming up tomorrow as they take on Nashville SC, who themselves have the chance to, you know, make some history this season. They are if the results hold, I believe if they do not get another loss, they will have the fewest loss. They only have three losses on the season. Would be the fewest losses in for a single team in MLS history. They also are, I think, need one tie, maybe two, to have the most draws in a single MLS season.
So weird.
It is absolutely wild. And suffice it to say, I don't think you're going to score four goals on Nashville, whether you're at home or on the road. Certainly not on the road if you're Columbus with the way they've played on the road. But this is going to be a huge test. I think, maybe I don't know, or if you want to run through the scenarios now before we get into it, you know, my understanding or what I'm thinking is if you're Columbus, you need at least 4 points out of this week and really six to remain in the playoff hunt. And even then you're not going to have full say on it. You're going to still right. need help from others.
Yeah. At least four. I think you got to get at least a point against Nashville, which, hey, it's very possible because all Nashville wants to do is draw games.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the fact that Nashville, this is a team that is the only team in MLS yet to lose at home in their final season at Nissan Stadium before they move to their new stadium, their soccer specific stadium. In the fairgrounds. On a fairground.
Can you believe that?
Yeah, can you believe
that? Move them.
15 draws, most in the MLS by far. They have the least losses with three. They've conceded the least goals in the Eastern Conference with 26. I'm pretty sure that's probably also the least in MLS. Nope, Seattle's only conceded 25, of course. But yet they're 18 points behind first place New England in the Eastern Conference, which is just wild because New England's won 20 games and only drawn six. But
they could also set a record for points and wins right. in the season.
Yeah. And New England's already clinched the number one seed in the East. And clinched it at the beginning of October. Alex, what do you got?
Do we know if their new soccer specific stadium, if they're going to have to share that towards the end of the fall with a Quarter Horse Congress, or was that just a Columbus thing?
I have no idea. I'll have to ask. My brother lives in Nashville now. I'll get the deets from him. He'll be at the game behind the crew bench so he can tell me how many times Caleb Porter yells at the officials. But this is a tough test for the crew. Absolutely. This is the toughest road game they've had since they went to New England. And hey, they tied New England there in Foxborough, and Aloy Room was making saves on one leg, basically. He'll have two legs this time, and he'll be able to be fully healthy for this game. But Nashville's a team where it's just weird. It's either going to be so competitive that it ends in a 0-0, 1-1, or they just destroy you. I mean, Nashville's had some huge wins this season. I can recall like some 5-1s, 2-2 draw against Orlando recently. They beat Inter Miami 5-1. They beat New York City 3-1. New York City has been awful of late. Five goals at home against DC. Like, this team can offensively just attack you. With Hani Mukhtar, who I honestly think is the MLS MVP. If I had an MLS MVP vote, I would pick him to win the MLS MVP. Randall Leal is another player that comes to mind. This Nashville team is very, very impressive. It's only their second season in the league. They're going to make the playoffs again. They made the playoffs last year, had that big upset over Toronto to play the crew at Historic Crew Stadium back in November in a very competitive game. That was probably the most competitive game of the playoffs for the crew, just because the Eastern Conference final, New England wasn't threatening. Mm-hmm. Nashville was threatening, and they held the crew scoreless for 90 minutes until extra time. So this is going to be a big game for the crew. It's their first ever trip to Tennessee. You can add Tennessee onto the list of states Columbus has played in. Connecticut is included in there because they played a game at Hartford last year because of COVID. But this match, try and get a point, 0-0 draw with them in July at lower.com field. A point is possible. just have to find a way to shut down Hany Mukhtar. He's going to be the danger man in this game. He's been on fire all season long. And if you're a Crew fan, the other games to watch out for on Wednesday will be Orlando against Montreal and Atlanta against NYCFC. Ideal scenario is the Crew wins, New York City loses, and Montreal loses. And then that would put the Crew 1 point back of seventh place.
So you're saying there's a chance there.
There's a chance, but we have to be realistic here. It's a tough chance because New York City's been off of form. Atlanta could beat them at home. Orlando's a good team too, beating at home against Montreal. Those results are possible, but be aware, Columbus could get eliminated from the playoffs this week. They would have to lose both of its games and be 10 points back of seventh place, and then they would be out of playoff contention, which is possible because Montreal could win both of its games, DC could win both of its games, and Columbus could lose both of its games, and then they're 10 points back of both those teams. So that's the nightmare scenario. So if they don't lose one of the two, they are still alive by next week.
Alex, why? What are some good outcomes? What do you see anything, you know, against this Nashville team? They've got most clean sheets in the league. Ori ran through all the stats. They've been so good defensively at home. Do you have any reason for optimism Wednesday?
I think we're coming off a big win. And on paper, I think this Crew team is one of the best teams in the league. It's just a matter of, can they find the form that we saw basically during stretches last season? And, you know, to be fair, this team usually gets hot in the fall under Porter. So, I mean, maybe we find that form. I think one thing that we've been missing, at least in recent weeks, is, you know, a freed Lucas Ellerayon. I don't even know what the word is. Maybe not freed, but Lucas, who is able to dominate a game, right? They need to find a way to get him out of this, like, two or three people suffocating pressure that he always seems to find himself under. Or other people need to step up big and provide some sort of a release valve so they can't triple man Lucas all the time. Because he's been, you know, basically, you know, on lockdown for half of these games we've been seeing. And I think that's going to be a big factor in this. You know, am I optimistic about this game? Not particularly, but this is such a weird league that, like, we could go there and we could smoke them 3-0, right? Like, we could just go there and dominate Nashville. On paper, this is a very, very good Crew team. So I think they just need to take a hard look at that tape, 4-0, what went right, and go in with confidence and you know, see how things go. But definitely a very, very tough opponent in Nashville, much tougher than Miami. So it's going to be a lot harder to get a result, especially away from home.
We know, you know, rotation is so important, but when it's getting this close toward the end of the season, I almost think you need to be putting out the best, most competitive 11 as you can. You can't really afford to concede. I mean, you might settle for a draw in Nashville, but you can't play for one.
No, got the win.
Yep. So you think we're going to be seeing a competitive, you know, similar starting 11 to what we saw on Saturday?
I would do it. I think, you know, unless these guys have their legs falling off, or, you know, the physios are saying, hey, this dude's going to, you know, tear a hamstring if you throw him out there, I think you go with it. I mean, each of these games is a playoff game at this point. Are you going to rest players in the playoffs? No. Can you rest players now? Can you afford to rest players now? No, not really. I think you have to throw out your best 11 every single game, even if these guys are on short rest, you know, barring any sort of medical problems that might be cropping up. You know, if your training staff is saying this guy is not fit to play, then obviously you can't play him. We do have some older players on the team who I'm guessing are going to need to be rotated at certain points. But no, I mean, like, you know, is there a reason to not throw Darlington Nagbe out there every single game? No, I don't think so. Is there a reason to not throw Lucas Ellerayon out there every single game? No, I don't think so. Jossie, I would even let Jossie play most of these games. You know, maybe you pull him off at 70, 80th minute. But I think you have to go full strength all the time. Otherwise, you know, if you're throwing a subpar team out there against, you know, good teams when you need 3 points all the time and you know that your away form stinks historically, then, you know, you're going to get the results that you deserve at that point. So I would play the best 11 every single game.
Yeah, there's a list of players that I would put as a list of they have to play every minute for the rest of the season. I put Aloy Room in that list, Milton Valenzuela, Mensah, but obviously he won't be able to. And if he's unavailable for Wednesday, then Mensah won't be able to. I would argue Josh Williams needs to play every minute for the rest of the season. Darlington Nagbe, Pedro Santos, Lucas De La Rayon, and Jossie Zardes. Those would be my guys that I would list that have to play every minute for the rest of the season for this team to have a chance to make the playoffs.
And don't forget, you know, you talk about, and we keep talking about this team's garbage away form. If they are going to make the playoffs, they ain't playing any games at home. Okay.
Most certainly not.
So you need to win on the road. If you cannot win on the road, then there's no point in going to the playoffs. Might as well pack it in and let's see the kids play for those last final four games, because you're going to have to win on the road if you want to make any noise in the playoffs. And so you got to start now against Nashville. So I guess unless there's, you know, anything else about this Nashville United FC, right? Aren't they one? Are they United? Are they an SC or FC?
Nashville Soccer Club.
They're an SC.
SC. They have their logo's a guitar pick.
Is that what it is?
That's what it's supposed to be, I think.
I hate that.
What sort of
guitar pit? Like this guy who plays guitar. I could be wrong. I have no clue what it looks like. A kind of like Art Deco type thing, but yeah, who knows? Regardless, let's get some picks in here because we've got another game that Crew are going to have to win later this week too. So let's go around and we'll see. We don't have Sam joining us yet. He's allegedly going to be joining.
Once he
jumps on, we'll just make him give picks on the spot. Forget the context of whatever else we're doing. We'll do that. But until then, let's with the group that we have here right now. Ori, give us a pick.
1-1. Nashville loves a draw. They're going to draw the Crew. I think the Crew come out. They know what's at stake. I think they're going to play well enough to get a result. But Nashville loves a draw. 1-1.
All right, Alex.
I'm going to say 2-1. Crew win. And I don't know why I'm saying that. MLS is just like one of the dumbest leagues in the history of professional sports. And, you know, why not? I think Lucas is going to know that their backs are against the wall and he's going to just boss it. There's no logical sense. Don't make any bets on this game with that scoreline, but I'm going to say 2-1. I don't know why I think they're going to win, but I think they're going to win.
Don't make any bets make on any this sense. League. Never bet on MLS.
That is also true.
No.
That is also true. Yeah.
All right. I like it. 2-1 from Alex. I'm going to go with 1-0. Good guys. I think Nashville is going to be content to just park the bus from, you know, the 5-minute mark on in. The one Josh Williams header off a corner kick at the death to secure 3 points for the Crew. And what would be the second away win this season? Third.
Their two road wins are New York City in May, the Lucas El Rayon double free kick extravaganza. Yeah. And the massive win against Atlanta in front of no longer named Kanye West. His name is now Ye, legally.
Yay, right?
Is it really?
Yeah, wow. Yeah, exactly.
We need another podcast on that. Did we make him change his name? Was he just so distraught?
It was just announced today. I cannot confirm nor deny that Kanye West changed his name to Ye because the Columbus Crew beat Atlanta at Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
I think that's why he did it.
It could be.
Taking three letters off of his name, like we took 3 points off of their standings in the MLS table.
They should invite him for the Red Bulls game on Saturday, which is a huge, huge game.
Oh yeah. I see. I just figured he changed his name to, you know, hide after that last album was such garbage. But moving on to you mentioned it, Saturday, back home against the Red Bulls. And this, I mean, every game's a must-win game. It's a super must-win game. It's a very, very, very much double secret need-to-win game.
Yes.
Against a Red Bull team that, again, Lucas El Rayán has their number, at least. So they've got that going.
Miguel Berry has their number.
Oh, yep, that's right. And we forgot. Miguel Berry, shout out to – I think he should have gotten credit for that OG.
Yeah, him or Matan. I mean, when those two are on together, they always create a goal, it seems like.
Look, I mean, like, Caleb Porter, play the kids. They're good.
They're so good as super sub. Like, I personally think Matan should start for Etienne, mm-hmm. in my opinion. I just think he adds more offensively. And hopefully he would have good communication with Valenzuela to track back between the two of them, because Etienne was not tracking back for Valenzuela, mm-hmm. or covering him. For him in the Miami game when Valenzuela was sort of cheating into the middle as like a third center back. But I think Barry just works too well as a super sub. Joss Izard is playing too well now. You got to start Joss Izard as up top the rest of the season. He's on form.
Absolutely. Well, Red Bulls, you know, coming in at least today, as of today, 3 points ahead of Cruz, same amount of games played, one fewer goal scored than Columbus this season. A little bit surprising. Still have themselves a positive goal differential. But this is going to be, you know, critical. I mean, it's a 6-point game. And are they playing Wednesday, Ori?
They are not. They are the only team not playing Wednesday. So we could have
Don Garber.
We could have the best chaos scenario. Crew beats Nashville. New York City loses on Wednesday. Then New York City, the Red Bulls, and the Crew would all be on 40 points entering Saturday's games, which would be super chaos. And obviously the Red Bulls would have a game in hand. But that would be just nuts. Not to mention, like, imagine Montreal loses to Orlando and DC loses to New England. Then Montreal and DC stay only a point above all three of those teams. It's going to be a race to the finish in the Eastern Conference. Like, some teams will start clinching, I would say, by a little bit by the end of this week, more so by the end of next week. But the fact that there's only a 6-point separation between third and ninth is redonkulous.
Well, NYC, you know, they're kind of scoring by committee this season. Patrick Klimala, you know, leading with goals with just 8, but, you know, you've got multiple players with, you know, at least 4 or 5 goals. They've kind of spread it around a little bit this season. Ori, you know, and I don't know if you've had the chance to scout them out too much. We're a little bit ahead in the week, but from what you've seen of Red Bulls this season, what do you expect Saturday in lower.com?
Well, the traditional New York Red Bull style of play, that high press, they love pressing the ball carrier. That's the Red Bull style. Every Red Bull team tries to do that. Red Bull Leipzig didn't work out for them against PSG, but I'm looking here at their previous score lines and talk about a trend. In their last 6 games, they've only scored 1 goal in each of them, which is weird.
I thought it was just they've only scored 1 goal, and I'd be like, that would
no,
sound like
they've scored 1 goal in each of their last 6 games. So they've won 1-0 against New York City twice in the last couple of weeks. They beat Cincy 1-0 in Cincy because, of course, they did. By the way, Cincy's out of playoff contention officially. Who would have thought?
Inter
Miami 1-0, tied Philly 1-1, tied New York City 1-1. This is a team that loves scoring just 1 goal in games. And I'm looking at some of their other results. They rarely get more than 1 goal in a game, if ever. It's only happened maybe like 6 times this entire season.
Well, so they got, you know, that if you can get another 2 Lucas El Rayán free kicks, then hey, you're in the driver's seat, you know? Right?
Anything. But if they're able to get out of that high press, you need quick transition passing against these guys, but they need to be able to get a good start against them. I emphasize good starts all the time, every single time. this team takes a lead, they usually win games. I'm pretty sure the only time they've taken a lead and not won is against Seattle. And they took that lead in the 77th minute, and they should have closed out that game in reality, but Sounders are just the Sounders. So take a lead, gotta be able to hold that lead and build on that lead, just like they did against Miami. That's how this Crew team wins games. They take the lead and they're able to hold on to that lead because they're good at that. And I don't know why they don't push for quicker up-tempo offense more often, because they just haven't done that throughout a lot of games this season.
Well, I don't know if they've been good at holding leads, but they've been,
I don't think they've blown a lot of leads though this season. I mean, I'm doing a quick scrub through of some games that they've played. Lead against Montreal, win that one. They didn't blow that lead. They came back against the Red Bulls. They didn't have a lead against Orlando. They went down 2-0 and then came back again. Yeah,
there you go.
We're down once against Cincy 2-1, came back. Lead against Seattle, lost that lead. Never led against DC or Atlanta or New York City in those humongous losses in July, August. Yeah, they haven't blown a lead. They've only blown a lead once this season. Yep. That's it. Take the lead. Take the lead.
If they jinx it, this was on Ori. It happened here, but it's not going to happen because we're going to get some picks in here and I expect them all to be wins. Ori, you first.
Me first. Crew win 3-1.
Ooh,
they're too good. They're turning LDC Field into a fortress. I'm pretty sure they've won their last five games there, including Campeones Cup.
Okay, I saw that stat and it was like, there's no way we've won five straight games at home.
Starting with the last Red Bulls
there
game.
There you go. If you count that, all right. Okay, Ori, not usually, this optimistic. Alex, I expect, what, like 4-1, 6-1?
No, I think it's going to be 1-0. But I think the goal is going to come from Bradley Wright Phillips, and this will be the game finally that Viking Army block me on Twitter because I'm going to shove it in their face. But yeah, I think it's going to be nil-nil until like the 80th minute, and they're going to pull off Zardes because that's what they should do because he's playing every game from now on, and they should rest him. I think they're going to throw Bradley Wright Phillips out there again. They played him against the Red Bulls last time. He seemed hungry for it. And I think he wants to show all those executives in New York that he still got it. So I think he'll score, and I think he'll celebrate. So that would be nice. I would enjoy that.
And BWP has not scored against Red Bulls before, correct?
No.
I don't think he did while he was with LA.
I'm pretty sure LAFC didn't even have the chance to play the Red Bulls in the COVID season. And BWP has scored one MLS Crew goal against Seattle and then one CCL goal for the Crew against Real Esteli in that meaningless second leg where Aiden Morris tore his ACL.
Let's not talk about that.
Yeah.
We're being positive.
All right. So Bart's
the
most positive.
Do we have any updates on Aiden Morris, by the way? Do we have any updates on, is his recovery going well?
His recovery is going well from my understanding. I would assume he'll be ready to go probably by the time next season is close to starting. Assuming the MLS season starts in March again, then he might be out maybe for the first month of that season. And I would expect him to be back in the squad by mid-April of next year.
Well, and then you alluded to it a little bit earlier, but any other updates on Artur before I make my pick?
Working off to the side, he's getting closer. I feel like if he's going to play this season, he would maybe play maybe like the last two games. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he plays this week.
Well, with that information in mind, I'll use it to, plug into the rest of my very complex formula. And we'll go with carry the 2-4-1 Columbus Crew win. They just going to continue on this just high scoring goal scoring trend. I like the BWP goal there. I think he scores one for good measure. I think you're going to have Pedro Santos remaining red hot. Let's give him a goal and assist. Lucas Zelrayan set piece to tie the record for set piece goals in a single season. Correct? Wouldn't that tie?
Yep. It would tie it with Giovinco with 6.
And we'll add another for Jossie Zardes as he continues to stay red hot. He's been player of the week in MLS in two of the last 3 weeks, right?
September 25th weekend. So twice in less than a month, he's been the MLS Player of the Week. But I wanted to make sure, Bart, you caught your breath after Josh Williams hit the post on Saturday.
Oh, well, that was... I just the group chat just started blowing up. I wasn't following it. And then it's just like,
I literally just tweeted as soon as that happened, GCG bag needs oxygen. He was so close to scoring. It should have been a goal. Just hit the outside of the post. To be fair, Williams has been really close to scoring. And it's kind of interesting that this season, you know, Jonathan Mensah has actually had a good goal scoring season. If you think about it, I think he's got four or five this year. And then Josh Williams has actually had a lot of good chances to score.
It's coming. And I mean, I predicted it, you know, coming against Nashville, but it could also come against the Rebels. Why not? You know, let's give it a couple goals this year. So we did crew, as we've established here, going to come away with 6 points this week. Obviously, already kind of ran through the scenarios. I want to touch on, you know, one other a bit of news, and we'll get a little bit into the international stage. Just first to see, you know, Alex, were you at that USA game last Wednesday? That glorious victory over the Ticos?
Absolutely not. I was not, and mostly due to the fact that I think the prices for that game were absolutely abhorrent.
Outrageous.
And at a certain point, just don't want to support U.S. soccer by buying tickets. It sounds really bad, but it's getting very aggravating for me, the fact that these are games where they should be trying to attract new fans, and instead they're just trying to milk it. Mm-hmm. And they say the same thing about exhibition games, where it's like, oh no, these are just money making things, we'll be different for the qualifiers, and it's not that way at all. But for an organization that's supposed to be focused on growing the game, they do a very bad job of it. So I watched part of the game but did not attend.
And then Ori, I take it I was at the game, and I'll say it was, I agree with you completely about that, Alex. I also, you know, in addition to the tickets being in the entire process being, you know, just so screwed up, they didn't notify you with how many tickets you got. And we won't get too much into it. I don't remember if we might have covered this back when the ticket drawing happened, but they didn't notify you you'd been selected in the raffle. You didn't get to choose your tickets. Nordeck was not GA, so you couldn't go and sit by the people that you usually sit by. You could only get, you know, a maximum of four tickets. They just charged your credit card without telling you you'd gotten them, where you'd gotten them. You got to guess what you got based off of how much they charged you, but you know how Ticketmaster fees work. When it came to the game, though, the environment, I mean, it was absolutely electric. I thought it had a chance to go sideways very fast when you see them concede, you know, immediately within the first minute. That kind of gave me some shades of some of the other more memorable Greg Berhalter games in Columbus on a big stage. But fortunately, you know, they're able to come back. I mean, that Dest goal just absolutely blew the roof off the place.
He was fantastic in that game.
Oh, man.
Fantastic in that game. So his own goal, which still continues to probably be the top scorer in LDC field history.
But you know, we'll take that one, take the win. I appreciate it as well. You know, I mean, to get back to Alex's point about U.S. soccer and just the, you know, complete joke of an organization they were, the only way, it, so far as I could tell, that you could find out before people started getting on supporters groups on social to announce to folks that it wasn't going to be general admission in the Nordeck, was by looking up and basically pretending to buy additional tickets to the game you already had tickets to. Then you could find out that it was not going to be general admission. They sent out notifications about all these, you know, World Cup qualifier week activities, these cool, you know, events the day, you know, day before, a couple days before. The unfortunate thing is they sent the notifications about those the morning of the game. So you'd missed half of the activities if you wanted to. Of course, earlier in the week, they told you that the game was going to take place on a Tuesday from the official, you know, U.S. soccer email. I mean, it was just what a shame.
I'm already lost at this point.
But don't forget that if you don't sell out your stadium and you don't support hard enough, it's the city's fault, not U.S. soccer's fault. It's always the city's fault.
And U.S. soccer notably giving a shout out to none of the Columbus Crew supporter group or TIFO Sweat, which actually created the TIFO for the game, and instead shouting out American Outlaws and Sam. And I think, you know, credit to what Sammer's SC, I think, that said, no, wrong ones. I mean, and you know, they did. I think AO did have something to do with the other screen printed TIFOs that were, you know, just kind of embarrassing. I mean, nothing against AO for that, but just why?
Yeah.
And you had
because they have like an intern who doesn't know anything about Columbus running their social media account, and probably they weren't even in the stadium for that game. But to American Outlaws' credit, they did use their official Twitter account to reply to US soccer and say, you know, you forgot a couple people and tagged Nordeca and TIFO Sweat. So, you know, I think they understood that they were going to get a lot of backlash for that. American Outlaws was notably absent from a lot of the Save the Crew work that was being done. So they're not, you know, the most popular group in the city of Columbus anyway. So they definitely kind of tried to nip that in the bud as soon as they could. But yeah, it's just, you know, it's typical U.S. soccer. It's very, very frustrating. And it's the ticket prices are even worse in Cincinnati. You know, and I just think, you know, for a team that's supposed to still be growing, we are still a growing sport. You know, we're not one of the top three leagues in the country. To attract those new fans, there needs to be some event. And I don't care whether it's a friendly or a World Cup qualifier. There needs to be some event where you can take a family of four for less than $100. Maybe just have that be a friendly and you charge crazy prices for World Cup qualifiers. I'd be fine with that if that was the case, but to have it be every single game like that is just like, guys, come on. This is ridiculous.
Well,
let's grow the sport.
One thing that happened during the week that I thought was funny on the Massive Report Instagram account, which by the way, you should all follow because we keep updates and stuff and whatnot. I decided to post a handy little slideshow of so many times the U.S. has beaten teams in Columbus, and 11 games in Columbus for the U.S. men's national team and World Cup qualifiers. They've won 8 of them. And they got 600 likes, the most likes ever for a Massive Report photo. And it turned into a giant commenting spree for Mexican national team fans that were like, hey, how about the fact that we beat you in 2016 there? Or how about the fact that you didn't make the World Cup? And I'm not kidding. My phone was buzzing with these arguments between Mexico and USA fans. I'm like, why us? Why did it happen here? So that was fun.
So you created a venue for Mexico fans to dunk on Columbus. Is that what you're saying? Or is your fault that you did this?
Accidentally, I did. Yes.
Next time, Ori, just delete the post. Just delete the post.
I've deleted one post in the history of a Massive Report Instagram. And I know what it was. And it was a big mistake on my part, but it was quickly deleted. And
what'd you do?
I accidentally put a picture of Eddie Gavin for Chad Marshall's birthday.
Oh, you pulled a Yop Stom. You're no classic better than Yop FC Stom. Cincy.
I know they look nothing alike though, but yeah, it was a great game. USA winning is always fun, especially in Columbus. We'll see what happens in Cincy for the Mexico game.
You know, you may have created a forum for Mexico fans dunk on us, but ABC6 created a forum for US fans to dunk on us. And I'm sure, you know, everybody, we've probably had enough about the discourse of the woman who and man who had no idea that there are any professional teams in Columbus, but I want to give a chance for either of you to weigh in on that. That just, I think it was a false flag. I don't think it was real. I think it was, you know, coached up or complete BS. I have a hard time believing that there's a person who would pay at minimum $85 to watch USA play soccer in Columbus and not know that there's a professional soccer team in Columbus. But I could be wrong. You're interested to hear your takes, fellas.
Sure, I'll go first. So first of all, whatever producer, editor, whatever you call the person who decides what those clips get put on television, whoever did that is a bum and they're bad at their job and they should feel bad.
Clay Hall, the sports editor, tried to basically throw it under the bus. So apparently did not come from the sports side of the shop.
Yeah. So I don't know what the story was with that, but that was bad. But I'm actually going to defend the lady here who was absolutely roasted on Twitter, by the way.
Undeservedly, I think, if we need to be honest here.
100% undeservedly. I mean, there have been like stories about murderers on local news and people are like, wow, that person's so bad. I'm so glad they went to jail. Like, this person was getting it worse than like as if they had killed somebody. Okay. Like, it was a total overreaction. Second of all, if you listen to the clip, I'm 95% sure that she just misspoke. And what she was talking about was that there's not many opportunities where you see national team, like international competition in Columbus. And that's what she was talking about. Now, obviously, you know, what she was saying was that the Buckeyes are the biggest show in town and that they don't have anything that's kind of that caliber in town. And, you know, you can debate that.
She's not wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, when you look at how many viewers Ohio State, Michigan has nationwide versus how many viewers, you know, Columbus Crew versus DC United has, you know, they're not comparable. Right.
Look at how many views Ohio State Blue Tulsa Jackets has.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think that she just misspoke. And this is one of the things about when you're walking up to some random person after a soccer game, after they've been standing for 2 hours, and you ask them a bunch of dumb questions on the spot, they're not going to have the perfect words to respond to you, right? I think that's all it was. I'm on that lady's team. I think she's fine. I bet she knows that the Crew exists, and I bet she's a fan. But definitely an odd editorial choice to air that. And that person is the real villain here. And I hope they think about that next time and just don't do it, right? Just show the good, eloquent answers and don't embarrass some random poor person who you literally walked up to on the street and embarrass them in front of all their friends and family on television. So that's my two cents.
I wouldn't use the word villain. I think that's a little strong for anybody in this situation. I think, yeah, it's an editorial mistake. Yeah, it's a little surprising to hear somebody say that, especially going to the game. You're just a little flabbergasted by it, but it's okay if people don't know stuff that you know. Like, that's the thing that I think social media helps to breed in people, especially with people within sort of a central community, whether it's a Crew community, another sports team, or anything else. They just jump down people's throats about not knowing about this. And it's okay if people don't know about it. People aren't entitled to have to push down somebody's throat that, oh, you don't know about the Crew or the Blue Jackets or anything like that. I don't know. I'm okay with it. I'm never a fan of calling people out like that if it's something harmless. So I don't think it's okay, in my opinion, for people to go after her and be like, oh, she, what the hell? How does she not know about this stuff? It's an honest mistake. If she really doesn't know, whatever, it's okay. Let's just all be better people. I think that's the bottom line.
Thank you. That was heartwarming, Ori. And I think you guys are both right on this. And I will agree with you, Alex. They are ABC6. They were the villains in this one. It was a dumb editorial choice. Hopefully everybody learns. And yeah, give the woman a break. I think she probably did misspeak, and we'll all try to learn, and we'll all try to be a little bit better, including our friends at WSYX. We'll try to be a little bit better too. And it looks like we won't have Sam on to make us better, but fellas, unless anybody has any other, you know, parting shots or last thoughts, I'm going to hand it over to you, Ori, to thank our good friends at Saucy Brewer.
Well, we don't have to expand on this, but the World Cup shouldn't be every 2 years. I'm just saying.
That's really, really, really stupid.
FIFA. Congrats to Newcastle, Bart, for getting all the money in order to, turn into a great team. But you know what's a great team? The people at Saucy Brewworks, who give you great service at the best bar in Columbus and place to be in the world. Saucy Brewworks, if you brew work, why not be saucy with it? 443 West 3rd Avenue. Also, guys, make sure to like the podcast, give us 5 stars on iTunes, listen on the Spotify and be like, yo, this podcast is the best thing I've ever listened to, and Saucy Brewworks is the best place I've ever been to. So go ahead and do that. Share it on the socials, except TikTok.
Nice things, like and comment. If you've got issues, tweet at Patrick Murphy. It's @_Pat_ Murphy. Is there another underscore in there?
Seconded.
Again, let them know. You can be, you remember everything we said about not doing to the nice young woman who was on ABC6. If you are mad at her, tweet your angry tweets at Patrick Murphy. And any occasion, if you're mad at anybody about anything, tweet it and direct it to Patrick Murphy. It's just as a good just rule of thumb.
It really is a great rule of thumb. And I heard that he was actually the person who decided to put that clip on television. And I heard he's a Mexico fan. So you should just definitely let him know what you think about that. Both of those things. Whenever it's convenient for you.
So again, nice comments and likes for us, and all your complaints over to Patrick Murphy. Well, fellas, it was a pleasure. We'll be back next week. We'll probably have a bit fuller cast, but for Alex and for Ori, this is Bart saying we'll see you next week. Bye, buddies.
Bye.